You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Good morning, Dolphins, and welcome to episode 23 of Dolphins Talk Weekly. I am your host, Kevin Dern. Please give me a follow at KevinMD4, and you can follow the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, pretty much anywhere you can get your podcasts. Sorry for taking the week off last week. Had the 4th of July holiday, and where I live, which is a small town in southeast Indiana, about 20-25 minutes west of Cincinnati, Ohio, they do the 4th of July upright, and we had some family come in, and really just kind of decided to take the weekend off from doing anything, especially since on Monday I am channeling my inner Billy Madison and going back to school starting my MBA program. And it was kind of a unique, you know, break to me. It gave me some perspective. My wife took a photo of our one-year-old daughter and just showed how much she has grown from last year's 4th of July when she was just a few months old to now. And it reminded me that this past week was also my one-year anniversary of working with the Dolphins Talk team. It started on July 8th, 2020. And just wanted to say thank you to Mike and the team at Dolphins Talk for bringing me in, for embracing my writing, and allowing me to start this podcast. It's been a very cool project for me to do, and I've been really excited to see how it has grown over the year. You know, going in, I didn't really know what to expect being a once a week podcast. You know, most podcasts are at least 3, 4, 5 times a week, if not daily. So just wanted to say thank you to all the listeners, all the readers out there who have interacted with me on Twitter, who have sent me messages, who have commented on the articles I post on DolphinsTalk.com. It really does mean a lot, and it kind of validates me wanting to start this project. And, you know, I would just say I'm also very thankful to my good buddy Travis Wingfield. For those that don't know, he and I did a podcast together in 2016 and 2017. Obviously, most of you, if not all of you, probably know him now as he is working for the Miami Dolphins team and has done great work at Locked On Dolphins prior to that. But he was sort of the one that kind of, you know, gave me that final push of encouragement to go out and start this project. So, Travis, buddy, thank you very much. Appreciate the push. And we'll have some steaks and some scotch when I get down to Miami this year, whenever that may be. Looking forward to talking about the season. And, you know, as you guys know, I usually like to lead off the show with a bit of an agenda of what I'm going to talk about. This week, it's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode. Pretty pumped because I just watched my hometown baseball team, Cincinnati Reds, beat the Milwaukee Brewers 4-3 after it looked like the bullpen was going to have blown the game again. They were ahead 3-1 going into the bottom of the eighth. Milwaukee tied it. And then Eugenio Suarez, who, if you follow baseball, you know, has been struggling mightily this year, hit an opposite field home run off Josh Hader in the ninth to win it. So, big deal for the Reds, but the Reds will never be, you know, anything more than second fiddle to the Miami Dolphins, and ultimately that's what we're here to talk about. And we're going to dive into sort of a reflection on last year real quick, and then we'll kind of go over my goals and expectations overall as a team for what I expect the Dolphins to do this year. And since we're, you know, 3 weeks away from camp, I kind of thought we would do a sort of an overview of the team this week in this episode. I'm working on an article to preview the defense. That should be up no later than Monday night. We'll do the defense in next week's episode, and then we'll do offense the week right before camp. And then we'll get into the preseason and training camp stuff and all the good that comes with that. But first, you know, summer's coming, and are you ready to unveil your beach bod? Well, you're in luck. Our friends at Manscaped.com just launched their fourth generation performance package, which includes the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. Compliment your summer bod with a trim from the leaders in male grooming. The sun is shining and calling your name, fellas. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for hot guy summer by going to Manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code DOLPHINSTALK at Manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code DOLPHINSTALK at Manscaped.com. Escape the shrubs and weeds this summer and shine with Manscaped. Thank you to Manscaped for sponsoring our show. And we all hope the Dolphins will shine this year, this third year of the Brian Flores regime. And just to kind of back up and put some context out there for how I was feeling about this week's podcast, you kind of have to view, in my mind, you kind of have to view that 2019 season as a bit of a throwaway year. You know, Brian Flores signed a 5-year contract. Most head coaches sign a 4-year contract when they sign their original deal with their team. And I think Miami's front office kind of had that grand plan to sort of rip up and rebuild everything, you know, taking it down to the foundation, which is something they had never done under Mike Tannenbaum, never did under Jeff Ireland. You know, really, the franchise has been pretty listless since the Dave Wannstedt era, if we're being completely honest with ourselves. So I think it was, you know, the right time, the right moment for Chris Greer and Stephen Ross to decide to do that. And, you know, they seem to have brought in the right guy, in my mind, in Brian Flores, to lead this team moving forward. So if you throw out year one, you know, and I would say going 5-11, the Dolphins overachieved, given what their roster was that year. Going into year two, and this is kind of hearkening back all the way to my first episode of the podcast, which was sort of a recap of the 2020 season. So I had given Miami 4 goals, and there's a written article on DolphinsTalk.com from before the season that details these. And just wanted to kind of bring that back into focus before we dive into this year's goals, because I think it provides sort of a natural, I won't say segue, but more of a natural jumping off point for this season and where the Dolphins go from here. Now, the 4 goals I had were, number one, at least get to 500. I felt like going 8-8 in a pandemic year with, you know, sort of the uncertainty surrounding Tua Tagovailoa before the season. Will he play? Won't he play? If he plays, how bad is the hip? You know, we didn't know those things. So Miami got to 500, obviously going 10-6. So that one gets the check. The second goal was improve and identify the needs on defense, because I felt like after year one, Brian Flores obviously knew what he was doing in New England. That carried over to Miami. You know, obviously there were rough games in 2019 to start, but the defense got better. And we saw it really take a nice jump, becoming a top 5 scoring defense, the best third down defense in the NFL, the best defense in terms of generating turnovers in the NFL. And they've been able to identify needs. They added more pass rush help with Adam Butler coming in as a free agent to help on the inside, drafting Jalen Phillips in round 1. They got more athletic in the secondary, bringing in Javon Holland and Justin Coleman. And there's been reports that Noah Igbinoghene may get the opportunity to play in the slot. I'm guessing that sort of hinges on what happens with Xavien Howard moving from here. But I would say that they readily identified needs and got better. They brought in, you know, more beef to stop the run as well. Bernardrick McKinney, who's been a fantastic run defense linebacker from Houston, comes in. They brought in Big John Jenkins, who had played with the team in 2019 and done pretty well. He comes in as sort of that true nose tackle, the traditional sense nose tackle, to help plug up the run. So I would say number two, identifying and improving needs on defense, gets a check. 3 and 4, I would say, are still to be determined, and I've kind of factored that into coming up with my goals for the 2021 season. So number 3 was to see growth on the offensive line. Now, in 2020, Miami started 3 rookies most of the year. You had to deal with Austin Jackson's injury and kind of the reshuffling that went around with that. Eric Flowers was injured and missed a couple games. And, you know, overall, I think as the season wore on, teams kind of got a better feel for what Miami was doing on offense and what Tua was doing, and started to kind of pin their ears back and figure out, you know, here's how we can generate pressures, here's how we can generate hits and get sacks on Tua. If you remember, Tua started off the year pretty well in terms of moving around in the pocket, stepping up in the pocket, and avoiding sacks, and that kind of petered out towards the end of the year. So I think that goal is still to be determined. We'll have to see how that goes now that they've brought in Matt Skura, who is presumably going to be the starting center, although I think there's more competition at that position than meets the eye with Michael Dieter and Cameron Tom behind him. And they're most likely going to have a rookie in Liam Eichenberg at right tackle, protecting Tua's blind side. Liam Eichenberg is also making the transition because he was a left tackle at Notre Dame. So that's going to be an area of growth that we're going to have to watch throughout the year. And then number four was to get a good sample size on Tua. And I'm going to take a quick pause, have a sip of my drink before I answer this one. I went with the good old Ardbeg and Noah tonight. A little bit of a heavier scotch, but hey, we're celebrating a big Reds win, so why not? But as far as getting a good sample size on Tua, you know, 9 games, I would say ordinarily, is a pretty good size. And I talked about this, you know, in the past month about the catching Buffalo series and how he compares to Josh Allen, who I would say is hands down the best quarterback in the AFC East, and probably one of the top three quarterbacks in the AFC in general as a whole at this point in time. And we saw that Tua kind of has a baseline that was pretty well advanced in terms of where Josh Allen was. But we didn't get to see Tua really in optimum circumstances. We had, you know, he got to play a game and a little more than a quarter with Preston Williams, and then he was gone for the season. Devontae Parker missed several games and was playing through an ankle and hamstring injury most of the year. And we didn't really have those separators. The offense wasn't quite tailored to Tua Tagovailoa's strengths. You know, Chan Gailey was certainly more brought in for Ryan Fitzpatrick than developing a young kid. And Miami's running game had moments, you know, primarily Savon Ahmed in the New England game and some games from Miles Gaskin early in the season. But it was certainly not what I would call consistent. And there were several games when, you know, like Kansas City, where Gaskin and Ahmed were both gone because of injuries and or COVID. So we didn't get to see Tua in those circumstances. So I would call that a to-be-determined, you know, rating for that goal. I know a lot of Dolph fans will disagree and say Tua, you know, made good throws, which he did. He moved around the pocket better than I imagined he would coming off the hip. And, you know, ultimately, I think the biggest gripe you have with that season is, you know, just getting more confidence and letting it rip. And if you followed, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, if you followed his trainer at Perform, if you've checked out fellow Dolphins Talk member Reason in the Finish Line podcast, or checked out Reason's YouTube channel, you've seen the interviews with Tua's trainer that talks about how much, I guess, further along physically he is this year as compared to last year. So, you know, I think Dolphins fans are certainly in the right to be excited for what he's going to bring to the team this season. But I do think he's got a little bit of a shortened runway as we head into 2021. Now, I really kind of racked my brain, you know, over about 2 days trying to come up with some realistic goals for the team. And I'm just going to kind of start small and we'll work big. And number one, I wrote down at least split the season series with the Buffalo Bills. Let's face it, Buffalo was in the AFC Championship game last year. They're the division champions. Miami wants to get where Buffalo is. And Miami, so far in the Brian Flores era, is 0-4 against Buffalo. Two of those games were not particularly close, and I think you can make the argument a third one wasn't that close either. So, if anything else, you can still win the division, you know, while losing to Buffalo at least once. But I think for Miami's sake, and I think for the sake of kind of putting themselves on the map and into the true playoff contender conversation, you at least need to split the season series against Buffalo. And I realize that's a bit of a myopic goal, but, you know, Brian Flores beat the Jets and the Patriots with that 29 roster, swept the Jets last year, beat the Patriots in Miami. You know, the game in Foxborough was pretty close, but they just haven't had that opportunity to beat Buffalo yet, and I think that's kind of a good jumping off point. I would say working up the next goal would be to solidify the offensive line for Tua Tagovailoa or whoever a new quarterback would be after the season. Now, I know that's kind of a loaded gun statement to make, especially in Dolphin land, but hear me out on that. In terms of solidifying the offensive line, you know, you have the three rookies from last year, Austin Jackson staying at left tackle, Solomon Kinley moving to his more natural left guard position, assuming he beats out Jesse Davis in camp, Robert Hunt moving inside to right guard, where a lot of people think he will do well. That's sort of a question I have in training camp, because I do have, you know, a pair of eyes that were at training camp last year, and Robert Hunt didn't do so well at right guard in camp. So that's something that, you know, needs to bear watching. But now you have another veteran presence at center in Matt Skura on board. You have Liam Eichenberg, who, you know, was very consistent at Notre Dame, you know, switching from left tackle to right tackle to protect Tua's blind side. And I think you kind of value that consistency of protecting a quarterback's blind side. You know, look what we had with Laremy Tunsil, Jake Long. If you go back to the 90s, look at what Richmond Webb was able to do for Dan Marino. There was always that constant, consistently good performer at left tackle, you know, at various points in the franchise's history. With Tua being a lefty, now that flips to the right tackle side, and I think Liam Eichenberg gets the chance to prove that to be true. You know, I was watching some film with him a couple weeks ago and put out a late night tweet saying he kind of reminded me of a combination of Levi Jones, former Cincinnati Bengals tackle, and Joe Staley, former San Francisco 49ers tackle. If you kind of fuse them together, I thought that was an appropriate comparison. And then, you know, Chris Kaufman on Twitter, you know, replied to that tweet, and most of you know him as CK Parrott, and said that Matt Light, I have a friend named Adam Light, Matt Light, the former Patriots tackle, was a good comparison for him. And I think Chris is damn near on the money with that one. You know, if you can get that consistent pass protection, that proficient technician to help protect Tua, you're going to have a good chance to solidify that offensive line. I think the two guard spots are probably what I would pay attention to the most. On top of that, if we have that, you know, assumed starting five that I just kind of rattled off there, you have some impressive depth pieces with DJ Fluker, with Jesse Davis. Both of those guys can play multiple spots. Michael Dieter has started for the Dolphins before. And, you know, they seem to like undrafted free agent Robert Jones a lot and gave him an extra chunk of coin in the signing bonus they gave him as an undrafted guy. But you have to be able to solidify this offensive line moving forward. It's got to get better at pass protection. It has to get better at run blocking. Hopefully, you know, the addition of Charlie Fry, more input from Eric Studesville will help the running game. And hopefully new offensive line coach Lemuel Jean-Pierre can get the most out of these guys. Now, I think that point kind of ties into the third goal for the season. And that would be, you know, much as I hate to say it, if you get the offensive line solidified, we should have a pretty good read on what Tua Tagovailoa is or isn't by the end of this season. And let me back up for a moment. I would argue that if someone came up to you and asked the question, you know, do the Dolphins have a Super Bowl winning roster right now? I don't think the answer is yes. But I think you could give the answer along the lines of, well, it could be if Tua Tagovailoa takes a nice jump from year one to year two. You know, obviously the defense is what it is. Miami's loaded up on playmakers. They've made additions on the line. I think Tua Tagovailoa is kind of the hinge of this season. And obviously there are expectations in place. Miami is seemingly loaded up on draft ammunition, you know, a year or two down the road with those extra first round picks. And I think ultimately what that's done is kind of shortened the runway for Tua Tagovailoa. I think the last thing that Stephen Ross and Chris Greer want to go through is sort of what they went through with Ryan Tannehill and letting him toil around for 5, 6, 7 years before ultimately making the determination he's not the guy. You know, Ryan Tannehill went through two different coaching changes. He went through two different iterations of the front office. I think it's, you know, Stephen Ross's prerogative and hopefully his, you know, goal for this season to make the playoffs and become a contender. And I certainly think with Brian Flores and the coaching staff and elements of the team, they can be one with better quarterback play. So I think a lot of this season is going to kind of come down and hinge on how well Tua Tagovailoa does or does not do. Now, again, let me state this for the record. You know, in that 2020 quarterback class, he was my top guy. I think he can be a really good quarterback in the NFL. You know, top 8, top 10, I think it's certainly within his capability. I don't know that he'll ever be a top 5 or top 3 guy, but you don't necessarily need that to win when you have such a good team around him. And if you look at how Miami structured the core of this team from a contractual standpoint, they've given themselves kind of a 3-year runway, counting Tua, to kind of build and maximize this team before you're at that point where you have to make a decision on giving Tua a, you know, air quotes, franchise quarterback type of deal. You have that flexibility right now. And, you know, I would put it forth that, you know, tying this into the final goal, which would be to make the playoffs, and I will just say make noise. If you're not able to do that, or if you get into the playoffs and you're roundly bounced in the wild card round, Miami's got those extra first round draft picks as capital. And, you know, who knows what may or may not happen with the Deshaun Watson situation. The Aaron Rodgers situation bears watching. Maybe a team like Atlanta wants to look to move on from a Matt Ryan after this year. I think there's certainly options that potentially, being the operative word, potentially could be out there that could be better than Tua Tagovailoa in the short term after this season. Because if they fail to make the playoffs, you know, there's going to be feet held to the fire by Mr. Ross. And I think Tua, you know, performing well, taking them to the playoffs, maybe winning a game or two, which I think is a reasonable goal given the collection of talent on this roster and how well the coaching staff has gotten this team to play. I think Tua Tagovailoa can be the guy that gets Miami to that point to where, you know, at the end of 2021, you would say that, okay, they're definitely in a championship window, not just a winning window, but a championship window, heading into 2022, and they're a true Super Bowl contender. And if they're not, then I think Miami has to explore some kind of option at the quarterback position. So I think those final two goals, you know, determining if Tua is or isn't the guy and making the playoffs, are kind of 1A and 1B. You know, they're tied together. They're linked. And ultimately, I think that's what's going to kind of be the tipping point for whether you call this season a success or not in the eyes of Stephen Ross. Obviously, he wants to win a Super Bowl, but every owner of the 32 teams wants to win a Super Bowl going into each season. I don't know that Miami has got that. They have very few players with playoff experience on this roster. I would have to look, but I don't believe, other than the former Patriots players, they have anyone that's got a Super Bowl ring to their name. So you know, playoff football is a different type of football. And, you know, for me, I think my expectations would lie firmly in, you know, winning at least 11 games, making the playoffs, and advancing a round. You know, and from there, just kind of let the chips fall where they may. So that's going to conclude kind of the bulk of my season goals for this week's podcast. I am currently working on a sort of a long-term analytical piece for DolphinsTalk.com and am looking for someone with a little bit more video editing experience than I personally have. So if you or someone you know might be willing to do some pro bono work in terms of video editing, please connect them with me or send me a DM on Twitter. Again, my handle is at KevinMD4. Would love to get really working in that project in earnest over the next couple weeks. Again, we talked about it in the beginning of the show. This was sort of the goals for the team overall as a whole and where I think they can go. I think this is a playoff team that's capable of winning a game, maybe more. What I want to do over the next two shows, because we'll be into, you know, the start of training camp at the end of July, quicker than you realize, is next week I'm going to have the defensive article I'm working on up on DolphinsTalk.com, so we'll tie that in and preview the defense. I'll give you my depth chart prediction for the defense. I'll talk about some of the various packages and fronts that they use and guys that might contribute there. We'll do the same thing for the offense the week after that and maybe do a deeper dive into quarterback play and maybe what some of the potential weaknesses of the Dolphins are that they're going to have to eliminate as we go through the course of this season. Again, please give me a follow on Twitter at KevinMD4. I would love to link up with as many Dolphins as possible this season. I will be at the preseason game in Cincinnati. I will be at the game in Nashville against the Titans in the second to last week of the season. And right now I have narrowed it down to coming down to Miami for either the Giants or the Panthers home games. I may have gotten the order wrong there, but those are the weekends right after Thanksgiving in the first weekend of December. I will try to announce that as soon as possible. Again, thank you to everyone who has read my articles, who has listened to the show, who has followed me on Twitter, who has listened to the podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It means a lot to me, and I look forward to creating more content as we go. I will try and balance that out with school as best I can, but thank you very much. It means a lot. Fins up. Have a great weekend.